The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 7, text number 27, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on January 1st, 2010, in Wellington, New Zealand.
Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatan Vitam Damsa Jeeva Sadaita Sadhuta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha.
So constitutionally, we're pretty good. We're pure by constitution. But since Krishna has given us some independence, we can spoil that goodness, that pureness, and become contaminated. Now, some people argue this is God's imperfection. It's His fault. I can't be blamed for being a rascal. It's God's fault because He gave this independence. I'm not accountable for my sin, for my impious act, because actually it's God's responsibility that He created me with the ability to do this. This is a very clever argument, you see, to try to get free from the reactions of sinful actions. But it's simply an argument, it's not the fact. The fact is that God has given us this independence because there's no meaning to being a living entity unless you have independence. In other words, the Lord could have filled up the spiritual sky with millions and billions of robots. But have you ever tried to associate with a robot and have a loving relationship with a robot? You can't have it. It's just a machine. There's no person there, you see. You cannot have a loving relationship with a robot. Not possible. So, the Lord, from His very self, is eternally expanding an infinite number of living entities, endowing each one of them with full freedom to love Krishna or to leave Krishna. Because unless that freedom is there, it's not really a living entity. It's just a robot. It's a machine. So, when that free will exists, which it must exist for love to exist, and without love, there's no happiness. There has to be love. Therefore, there has to be independence. So actually, Krishna's arrangement is perfect. And even if we do misuse that independence, there's a safety net to protect us. That's called the material energy. It's like when I was a boy, we went to the circus. And there was the tightrope walker. He was way up there. I was amazed. He was up there on the tightrope. He brought a chair out. He put a chair on the rope. He was sitting, relaxing on the chair. Just sitting there relaxing on the chair on a rope that he had balanced on a rope way up. But just in case there was some accident, there was a net down there, you see. He would not be killed. He wouldn't be finished. He'd be caught by that net. Of course, it'd be rather embarrassing. I mean, after all, he's a tightrope walker, a professional, and you don't expect him to fall off the rope. But just in case he did, at least he wouldn't be dead, you see. So in the same way, Krishna has given this material energy, this is the safety net, you see. It's not that if you don't love me, then you're annihilated. You know, I just completely, totally destroy you forever. No. Krishna doesn't want to do that. Each one of his parts and parcels is very dear, just like every child is dear to the parents, you see. So this material energy is a safety net. It gives us the facility to recover from our mistake and regain our original position in the pastimes of the Lord. So actually, Krishna's arrangement is perfect. And we have to take the blame on ourselves if we're in delusion, if we're in hatred, if we're overcome by desires. It's our own misuse of independence, that's all. We should stop trying to blame Krishna for our mistakes. Take the full responsibility. When we do things right, we should give all credit to Guru and Krishna. It's the mercy of Guru, the mercy of Krishna. I did something right today. And we mess up, we should take the blame. Not try to pass the buck onto someone else. Well, it's the temple president's fault. He didn't give me the right service. No, it's your fault. We should take the blame on ourselves when we do something wrong. Because as soon as we take the responsibility, you see, as soon as you take the responsibility, then you actually take control of your destiny. This is a very important point. When you're willing to own up to take the responsibility for your misdeeds, that's when you actually take control of your destiny. And you turn it around, you see. We've fallen down, we're in the cycle from the Lok, the spiritual world, we're in this repetition of breath and death, and we remain here until we are willing to take responsibility that I made a mistake, I need to rectify it, let me humble myself before Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas, and let me now reform myself and go back to Krishna. So this process is very powerful, it's very effective. This is a process coming from Krishna. Imam vivashvate yogam proktavan nahavam yuyam vivashvan manave praha manur iksha kave bhuvya. Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, text number 1. I instructed this imperishable knowledge, this imperishable science of yoga, to the sun god Vivashvan, who instructed to Manu, the father of mankind, who in turn instructed to Ikshvaku. So this knowledge has been very carefully handed down. This perfect knowledge, you see. Sa eva yang maya tedya yoga prokta paratana bhaktosi me sakha cheti zahasyam hetadutamam. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you're my devotee as well as my friend, and therefore you can understand the mystery of this science. So, if we can become, instead of enemy of Krishna, we become friendly. All right, Krishna, I want to make up for all my past misdeeds. I'm not going to be your enemy anymore. I'm going to be friends with you by becoming your servant, your surrendered servant. Not buddy-buddy with you, but I'm going to be in friendly terms. For us, being friends with Krishna means to become servant of Krishna, you see. For Arjuna, it's slightly different. Because he's a liberated soul, and he has that friendly relationship. For us, being friends with Krishna means to stop fighting with Krishna. Have a peace treaty, in which we are fully surrendered to him. That's the peace treaty, you see. So, if we can take advantage of this wonderful, wonderful science of bhakti coming down from Krishna and these great acharyas, Mahajano Yena Gutasya Pantha, coming down from these great, great acharyas, you see. Brahmaji, Narad Muni, Vedavyas, Madhvacharya, so many great, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'm just giving a few highlights here. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and our most beloved founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya, Astatarjadu Shishi Maresi, Bhakti Vedanta Ti Dandi, Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada. You see? This knowledge has been so kindly given by these great acharyas. So if we will take advantage of this wonderful, wonderful safety net that Krishna has given to catch us when we fall down from our constitutional positions, then we can regain that original position in the wonderful, wonderful, glorious pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everybody is there. I mean, it's going to be... Just imagine, going back to Godhead, there's Krishna, there's Radharani, there's Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mata, there's the cows, the calves, the butterflies, the flutes, the rocks, Govardhan, Jamuna. Just imagine going there, you see. And actually waking up in the pastimes of Krishna. You see? How glorious that will be. So now we have to qualify ourselves by chanting good rounds, by working together cooperatively under the leaders that Krishna has given us here in ISKCON. If we can work very, very nicely together as a loving spiritual family and do our sadhana very nicely to purify our hearts, those rounds, really try to absorb ourselves in the rounds. Actually, this chanting is so important thing. I just gave a whole seminar, a whole retreat actually, a whole series of lectures in Govinda Valley, Australia. We had a whole retreat, Japa meditation retreat, in which we went into great, great detail. We went into great, great detail with the transcendental topic of the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So, if we will do our individual sadhana very nicely, going deeply into the holy name of the Lord, deeply absorbing ourselves in the holy name, and we will work very nicely together to cooperate with each other to please Prabhupada, then our lives will be successful, and we will no longer see the repetition of birth and death. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah. Regarding what word?
Us being human beings in the spiritual world.
Oh, the souls in the spiritual world?
Yeah, yes. And however, we can take inanimate forms as well, like we could be a rock.
Prabhupada, I read in Prabhupada's writings, or his recorded words, I think it was a conversation. It's there I read it in the Veda base, where Prabhupada is saying that every living being in the spiritual world is human, human soul, human consciousness. That's why we have this form, just like this shirt matches the form that it's being worn upon. The material body is also like a garment. The spiritual body in its manifested form is also a human form. And the even the non-human inhabitants of the spiritual world all have human consciousness. And they actually are humans, but they assume these different forms just for the sake of rasa, Just like in a drama, somebody plays one part, some plays another part. Some people even play animals in dramas. They put on an animal suit and play the part of an animal, you see. So in the spiritual world, everyone's a human being, actually. But they take on, it's not like someone's in the lower modes of nature. In the spiritual world, there are no lower modes, you see. Here, a plant or an animal means very lower mode, but in the spiritual world, it's not like that. Every single living entity, even the inanimate objects like flute, rock, they're all living entities. And they're taking up that particular rasa or relationship with Krishna to satisfy him, to make him happy. It's a great pleasure for them, just like it's described, the flutes, not the flutes, but the bamboos in the spiritual world are growing very tall. They're very proud that one of our family members is Krishna's flute, you see. They're feeling great ecstasy that one of our family members is Krishna's flute. So everything in Goloka Vrindavan is animate. There's no such thing as inanimate objects in the spiritual world. There is no such thing. Does that answer your question? Okay. Anything else? Everyone satisfied? There's no doubts about our philosophy. Everything is very clear now. There's nothing but pure bhakti. No more karma, no more jnana, no more yoga. All material desires, zero. Everyone's ready. Prabhupada told me like that. He said, all material desire is zero, then you can think big preacher. Yes.
Maharaj, lately we are reading an email where some devotees asked Srila Prabhupada how they can increase their book distribution. Mm-hmm. And after a long thought, devotees were expecting all kinds of answers. But Srila Prabhupada had only one instruction, and that was, he said, intentionally chant your 16 rounds.
Mm.
And just by doing that, everything will be fulfilled, all your desires.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yes. In Prabhupada's books, he explains that if one can chant the holy names without offense, this is an amazing quote. I mean, every time I hear it, it blows my mind. It's such a heavy, powerful thing that Prabhupada said. But he actually explains that anybody who can chant the holy names of the Lord without any offense, he becomes Jagat Guru, and by his influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. We can only dream of such a state of consciousness, of course, but in our neophyte condition right now. But the whole point is, the more your chanting is pure, the more you'll be potent for preaching, for distributing books, making devotees, etc. So, if we can focus, I remember I was in Dallas many years ago. There was some very powerful, big Maharati book distributors, actually. Sura Prabhu, Vaisheshika Prabhu, who's still a big, big, powerful Maharati, organizing book distribution. And I saw there, as soon as they came out to the temple, immediately the Krishna Katha, reading the books, discussing the philosophy. They just kept the Krishna Katha going 24 hours a day. It's not that, well, now we can do something else. No. You come back from the airport, Krishna consciousness. Read the books, discuss what's in the books. And that's been in the evening. And I'm sure in the morning they were going deep into their japa. Sometimes people say, what do you mean by deep? Deeply absorbing yourself in the holy name. Like people say, well, I can't even understand what that would mean. But actually everyone knows what that means. You ever been to a movie? We don't recommend going to movies now that we're devotees. But some of us weren't always devotees and we used to go to movies. And we had the experience that you go to a movie, you know, you're sitting there in North Dakota where it's, you know, 10 degrees below zero, and you're watching some movie about the Fiji Island. And you know, and you actually feel like, wow, it's so wonderful, the blue lagoon and the ocean breezes, it's so wonderful and nice. And then all of a sudden, the movie comes to an end, and you go, oh my God, I'm in North Dakota, and it's 10 degrees below zero, and I have to get home tonight, you know, through the ice and the snow. In other words, you get so absorbed in the movie that when it's over, it's like the movie was the reality, and North Dakota was a dream, you see. Then you finally have to wake up and realize that actually the movie was a dream and North Dakota is the reality, but you get into a thing where the movie becomes the reality and the non-movie becomes unreality. You get so absorbed in the movie. So the same thing we can do by going deeply into the name. The difference is, in this case, the holy name is the real reality and this stuff out here is the unreality. You see, birth, death, old age, and disease. So the more deeply we can just get absorbed, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Deeper, 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 you see. This deep analogy is very good. Just imagine you're in the desert and you're dying of thirst, but you have a drilling machine. Well, guess what? I don't care what desert you go to, if you go deep enough, you're going to hit water. You see, just start drilling down through the desert floor. So right now in this desert consciousness, you know, our minds, our present state of consciousness, where it's just dry, you know, there's no bhakti. But actually the bhakti is there, if you go deep enough within. And what is the drill? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The more dry you are, the deeper you have to drill. But sooner or later, you will hit water, you see. And we have that drilling process, you see. It's a shraddha, sarasanga, bhajana kriya, anartana vritti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prema. You go deeper and deeper and deeper into the name, and you go through all these different stages, and finally you achieve pure love of Godhead. So it's actually all right there. You got the whole spiritual world right there in your bead bag. You just got to dive into that 16 rounds as your most important activity every day. And I recommend, if it's possible, according to your schedule, that you finish all your rounds before you eat even one morsel of prasad. That's the best thing. Because once the day gets rolling, we get into more of a rajasic mood, not a meditative mood. We get into the doing mood, you see. Rajasic. That's the doing mood. I got to go here, go there, do this, do that. That's rajagun. But the early morning, it's meditative mood. You know. I'm sitting very calm and peaceful, going deep. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. It's harder to do that once you get into the doing mode. Running here, somebody's trying to drive their car and chant their rounds at the same time. You know, have the one finger here out of the bead bag around the steering wheel. You know, Hare Krishna. It's not meditative. And you can't go deep into the names in that sort of chanting. So the best thing is, I know one godbrother, he was very intelligent godbrother. And he was the cook at the Atlanta Temple back in the days when we had a huge army of brahmacharis and samadhijis also going out every day and preaching like anything, distributing thousands and thousands of books. It was an incredible Sankirtan Center in those days, the Atlanta Temple. And he had to cook for all these preachers, and he had a huge jagya. And he had to make the deity sweets. Everything was on his shoulders, you know. And we loved him. I mean, he fed us, and he put his heart and soul and made wonderful prasad. We loved our cook. He was great. Ramnath Sukha Prabhu. But where's he going to chant his rounds? He had to go in right after Mangal Arati. He has to go to the kitchen. And then after cooking the breakfast offering, he's got to cook the lunch offering. After the lunch offering, he's got to make the deity sweets. You know, just one thing after another. Where's he going to have time for good rounds? So he was a very smart man. He'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, take his shower. He'd be there in the temple room. By 2:30, there he was. 2:30 to 4:30, he could chant very nicely, 16 rounds in those 2 hours with no distractions, no disturbance, full absorption. And then because he didn't get all of his sleep, then when all the brahmacharis headed down to the prasadam room, he headed to the brahmachari ashram and took a nice nap. Every day he was like clockwork. You could set your clock by what time Ramnath Sukha took his nap. Oh, you can shut your watch for the time he took his nap. He was very regulated. He had good rounds. He made great prasadam. He empowered the whole temple. In fact, when the devotees went to Mayapur for the festival, he had to stay back to cook, right? Somebody has to cook for the deities. He made some rasagula and they put him in jars, and they took those rasagulas to Mayapur and they gave them to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada loved them so much. He said, "I want more of the rasagulas from this disciple." So the telegram came from India. We didn't have the email in those days, you know. A telegram came all the way from India. Prabhupada wants more of those rasagulas. So he was in the kitchen cooking them. I was there with him, helping him. I remember it was so enlivening. A message came: Prabhupada wants more of your rasagulas. So this man had understood nicely, you know, how to take shelter of the holy name and then do your service with great enthusiasm. So much so that Prabhupada recognized him like that, you see. So if you absorb yourself in the holy names, you get all kinds of benefits. You become an empowered book distributor, an empowered cook, an empowered pujari, an empowered preacher, or an empowered devotee, empowered manager. Whatever you want to do for Krishna, whatever your service is, if you chant really good rounds, you're going to become empowered. That's a fact. You will become empowered. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tara Parvartana. You see, you'll become an empowered devotee. Krishna will give you his Shakti to the degree that you absorb yourself in Nama Ras. So there's a little elaboration. Just a little summary from what we discussed in our 2-day retreat out in Govinda Valley. Any other questions?
So just following on that one, Maharaj. So what is the secret of that commitment?
Love. That's the real secret. I one time asked one of our sannyasis, back in the old days, we're talking like 73 or something. I said, how does one overcome laziness? Now, I was a very lazy fellow, and I really was asking the question because I needed to know the answer, because I knew that Prabhupada didn't like lazy fellows. And I knew I was a real lazy fellow. But I was really scared at the same time. I wanted to hear the answer, but I was just scared he would say, by hard work. That scared me. I was really afraid he would say that. But he gave the most wonderful answer. He said, by love. And I went, yes, that's right. It's like the mother, how hard does she work to take care of that little baby? But does she feel like it worked? No, it's all love. It's just love. She loves her little baby. She's working practically 24 hours a day with hardly any sleep. Her eating has to be sacrificed. Everything just to serve that baby, but she's in ecstasy. So, if we have to develop those loving feelings, and how will you do that? Well, I can tell you that you can't. I was just having a conversation yesterday, actually, with Palanananda Maharaj in Melbourne, and I was sharing with him my realization about devotee relationships on one hand and chanting on the other hand. And I was making the point with Maharaj, and he appreciated this point, that we can only develop namaras to the degree that we develop sangaras, you see. You can't go deeper into the name, deeper into the process of bhakti, than you have gone deeper in your ability to have loving relationships with devotees. So this is the key of how to open up our hearts, these loving exchanges given by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita. Because by developing loving relationships with devotees, then that translates into loving relationship with the name, loving relationship with Krishna. You see, we have each other, and therefore we have to cultivate wonderful loving relationships among each other. And that loving feeling will enthuse us to do service, just as the mother out of love is serving the child. So this is the real key for becoming deeply absorbed in the name, in our service, in studying all the aspects of bhakti, the Navavidha bhakti. All nine aspects are enriched and enhanced by this love. You see? And Prabhupada confirmed it. He always quoted that English maxim, if you love me, love my dog, you see. If you cannot love the devotee of Krishna, Krishna says, no, I don't accept you. Ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta stateyi danaha. You know the Sanskrit. Ye me bhakta jana parata, sanaprita. The one who is my devotee, na me bhakta, he's not my devotee. You see. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So, in this way, we have to always be... And what does love mean? Does love mean, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Well, then we have some service, oh, forget it. Love means service. If I love you truly, then I'm delighted for every opportunity to serve you. That's love. Not the superficial, I love you, I love you. Like the wife gets really sick and she says, my dear husband, can you please wash the dishes? I have to take rest. I'm very ill. He said, but sorry, I have to go bowling tonight. No, you see. Love means service. So the more we can actually absorb ourselves in serving the Vaishnavas, you see, even if we don't have the love, just serve the Vaishnavas out of duty, and the loving feelings will come because they're already there within. So that love is the key. When those loving feelings start to become activated in the heart, then you'll find that you're entering into a wonderful state called samadhi, ecstatic absorption in bhakti. Any other questions? These are wonderful questions you're asking. I can see why you're the leader here. Mm-hmm. You're asking the best question.
It's not that bad. Because I'm struggling to.
This is how we have to always feel, that I am struggling. I remember my dear godbrother. Now he has now departed. He must be with Krishna now. Our Jali Sannyasi Shridhar Swami. He gave a wonderful stories in his Prabhupada memories. He was explaining how when he first took his initiation in Los Angeles. To him, Prabhupada was like, probably like God. I mean, he was in so much awe and reverence. Coming to before Prabhupada, offering his obeisances, he was just in a state of complete awe, but somebody tapped him and said, Prabhupada's talking to you. He was so much like, in a state of awe or nervous. I mean, I'm before the God's representative, but he couldn't hear that Prabhupada was talking to him. The devotee said, Prabhupada's talking to you. So then Prabhupada said, so you were Brahmachari? And he was thinking, well, Prabhupada blessed me, just bless me that I can remain Brahmachari. And he said, and so he remained Brahmachari. He became sannyasi. Now, 30 years later, and he said, with a smile, and here I am, still struggling. So, this is actually another pastime that Pradhan Maharaj just shared with me yesterday, which I had heard previously, but he gave me more details about the pastime in Boston, where Prabhupada said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I will not fall into Maya. Prabhupada took that position, that I'm struggling. Even Prabhupada put himself in, I'm struggling to not fall into Maya, and just begging Krishna to please save me from Maya. Prabhupada even presented himself as a struggling sadhaka, you see. So the more we can actually feel how we understand, honestly, this is a struggle. Now this is a war going on between me and Maya Devi, you see. I'm trying to be a devotee, and Maya, actually, she's testing me. She's Krishna's agent also. But she's testing us to see if we're really worthy of re-entering the pastimes of Krishna. I mean, this is a very exclusive party going on in Goloka Vrindavan. You know, it's a very exclusive party. You know, you can't make a show of being a devotee and be allowed in. Maya makes sure. She makes really sure. She tests you in so many ways to see if you're really, really serious about being Krishna's pure devotee, or is just a show for name and fame? I am a great spiritualist. I am a great transcendentalist. Maya is there to test us. So it is a struggle. Yeah, and war means struggle, and this is war. We have to declare war against the material energy in order to become Krishna conscious. So war means struggle. It means a great struggle. That's how we have to get the Shakti of Krishna. We have to humbly present ourselves as the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And then Krishna will give us all Shakti to conquer, to win this struggle. Anything else? Yes.
See, in this Kali Yuga, life is getting deteriorated by degree after degree towards very bad positions. You have been visiting the globe, various countries in the world. And what is the percentage improvement of the human beings towards devotional service and Krishna consciousness at this stage? What is the percentage improvement? Whether
since when?
Since what is the current status? Because people were...
What's the current... Right now it's... I mean, on the degradation scale, where do we stand right now in the human society?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, in all honesty, it's not... We haven't seen anything yet. It's right now, it is mildly degraded.
Oh.
We're only 5,000 years into the Kali Yuga. Yeah. It is only mildly degraded at this time, compared to what's coming down the tubes. The end of the Kali Yuga... when your neighbor invites you over for dinner, guess what the dinner is? You. So, I mean, this is very mild right now. The present time, the Kali Yuga, even though it's very heavy, compared to the way it's going to get, it's very mild. Therefore, we recommend get out now if you get a chance. Allen Ginsberg asked Prabhupada a conversation in Columbus, Ohio, back in 69, that what it would be like at the end of Kali Yuga. Prabhupada said, you know, I will eat you, you will eat me. He said, those who do not go back to Godhead, Prabhupada said sarcastically, they will see the fun. There'll be no fruits, no flowers, no vegetables, no milk, it'll just be cannibalism. Can you imagine a whole planet where the human beings are cannibals? Little pygmy men, actually. They'll be reduced in stature. If you're 25 years old, you'll be a senior citizen. It'll be so degraded. Even now in Africa, there's countries where people in their 30s are the senior citizens. The death rate is so... People are dying so young in that country. So the signs are there. But this is a very moderate degree of degradation compared to what's coming. So let's take advantage of the opportunity now to firmly preach this Krishna consciousness movement. And it is predicted there'll be a 10,000-year period during which this movement will flourish. There'll be like Satya Yuga-like condition manifested on this planet. So we have an opportunity now to bring that into being. Prabhupada, by the potency of Prabhupada and the predecessor Acharyas, there will be a Satya Yuga-like era which started 500 years ago with the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in February 1486. So there's a 10,000-year period in which the Kali Yuga will be held back and minimized very much. It'll be Kali's influence will be brought to a minimum during this 10,000-year period. And after that 10,000 years is over, the full-fledged Kali Yuga will manifest.
Thank you, Guru.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? Everyone satisfied now? All questions are answered? Everyone fully understands everything about Krishna consciousness? There's nothing that you're confused about?
We are totally satisfied to that extent. We would like to go directly to Golok Vrindavan via Mayapur and Vrindavan.
You have full determination to go there now?
Yeah.
You're not like the Soviet cosmonaut who was circling the planet, but he was kept looking, where is my Moscow? Where is my Moscow? Where is my Wellington? Where is my Wellington? You're fully ready to kick loose from all the attachments. That's very good. May Krishna bless you. And then, anything else? Or is everyone ready now to go on to the next phase of the evening program? Yeah.
Just would humbly ask you to, we have program lined up morning and evening, obviously Bhagavatam in the morning and Bhagavatam in the morning and Bhagavad Gita morning time will be Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita in the evening.
Right.
But if you have a plan for the next, or I'm not sure, devotees
seminars.
Devotees might have some desire that they want to hear a certain topic from you, or you might have come already prepared for the 3 days. So I just wanted to.
Yeah, if we package it in a little more attractive way, we may get a more enthusiastic audience.
Exactly.
So let's see. I could give a series of seminars on pure devotional service. I'll be doing that in Auckland next week anyway.
I hate that.
I could do a mini. How many sessions do we have? You want me to do it in the evenings only, or you want me to do the morning and the evening, or how should I do this seminar?
You are at your mercy, Maharaj. Whatever you feel would be better.
I think it's better if we study the standard Bhagavatam class in the morning, because that's really the foundation of our society. And then in the evening time, we can have this seminar. We have how many evening sessions that we have? We just have Saturday and Sunday, 2 evenings. All right, we'll have. We'll study the. I just need to have a copy of the. You have to provide me a copy of the Nectar of Devotion. Do you have that book?
Nectar of Devotion.
The Nectar of Devotion?
Yes.
Yeah, bring. I have it in my computer, but it's impractical here during a lecture. So bring me a copy of the Nectar of Devotion, and then we'll have special. Seminar, Pure Devotional Service, Part 1, tomorrow night, and then Sunday night, Pure Devotional Service, Part 2.
Sunday night is the Sunday feast lecture.
That's all right, Mark.
Yes, it'll be this will be the true Sunday feast.
Yes.
Pure bhakti. Because the prasadam, how much prasadam can you eat? And your belly will only hold so much. And then you have to stop. Otherwise you get sick. But if we can learn to feast on pure bhakti, then you can enjoy unlimitedly. And your belly will never get filled. Your belly will keep expanding unlimitedly for more and more pure bhakti coming in. Shuddha bhakti. Actually, there's a song by Bhaktivinoda, Shuddha bhakata. So yeah, Yeah, it's the most wonderful topic, actually. It's my favorite topic. Many years ago, there was some difficulty. One of my disciples had some difficulty. The temple president didn't guide her properly. He took advantage of her in a very illicit way. And he misused his position as the temple president. I really felt, I could see there was a need to emphasize pure devotional service for the whole society. So I proposed this. There's in the USA, they have the annual Festival of Inspiration. So I proposed that I could give a seminar on pure devotional service. They said no. You know, they didn't think it was very cool, you know. Pure devotional service, you know, so boring thing, you know. I mean, they didn't think it was a very interesting topic for this, that would inspire, that would attract the devotees, you know. They said, but you can give one on internet preaching. Because I'm known as the internet guru. I got 11,000 people signed up on my e-course, you know. And I thought, well, give one on internet. But not pure devotional service. I wasn't very happy with them. But in fact, my wife said, just tell them no, I'm not going to do it. But I was thinking, let me try to negotiate with them, see what I can do. So I said, here what, I'll make a deal with you. If you let me do pure devotional service, I'll also do internet. He said, okay. And guess which one was more popular? Pure devotional service. Did we join this movement to learn how to manipulate the internet? No, you can go to any, you can get so many books on that and stuff. This movement has something that you can't get anywhere else, and that's pure devotional service. So that's why we joined this movement. So we're going to be talking about the essence of what our lives are all about tomorrow night and Sunday night. Pure devotional service part one and pure devotional service part two, based on the Prabhupada's wonderful explanation in the Nectar Devotion. So we thank you very much. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.